There's a few shalach topics I'd like to talk about. Won't talk about them all tonight, but we'll see how long we can make the shalach last. Then we hit Yisrael, there's a bunch of Yisrael topics to talk about. And then hit Mishpatim. So you kind of want to like save some of these up for the middle of Vayikra. But in any case, today I'd like to talk a little bit maybe about the concept of Hiddur Mitzvah, which is a Bava Kamma topic for those learning Daf Yomi. Is a topic in Parshas Peshalach because the pasuk that we're all very familiar with, we recite every day, Zeh Keliv Yanvehu, says the Gemara, what does that mean? Gemara Masachah Shabbos and Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel. How are you supposed to understand what that phrase is getting at? This is my God, and what? What does Yanvehu mean? So the Gemara has a couple of possibilities. So one of the possibilities is that it means, it draws upon the word Noah, Nava, that we shall make him beautiful. Anvehu, I will make him beautiful. How do you do that? Says the Gemara, Hisnoa lefanav b'mitzvos. That the mitzvos that we do should be beautiful. Sefer Torah Noah, Lulav Noah, Tzitzis Noah. Every object that we use towards a mitzvah should be attractive, should be aesthetically pleasing. So it sounds like from that context that this is a din minat Torah, that this is a drasha on a pasuk, that there is an obligation minat Torah of zekei levi anvehu. Not everyone necessarily agrees, though. There are Rishonim who take a different stance, and a number of opinions on both sides of this question. What I'm interested in is some of the proofs that are brought that this is either a derais or a derabbanan. One of the proofs is from a Gemara in Maseches Bava Kamma. So again, those of you who are holding Bava Kamma and Daf Tes. So there is a discussion about Hiddur Mitzvah. And the Gemara, we talked about this a little bit at Hanukkah time, the Gemara raises the question, how much is one expected to commit towards a Hiddur Mitzvah? So the Gemara has a discussion. We'll take right now Rashi's understanding of this discussion. It's not the only way to see it, as we'll discuss later. But the Gemara has a discussion. So let's say I want to buy an esrog, and the esrog, the basic kosher esrog, cost me $30. So how much should I spend to get a nicer esrog, to get a mahudra esrog? Should I spend $300, 10 times as much? No. Gemara says you spend an extra third. Problem is we don't know what a third means, because there's two ways of counting. You can count a third from the inside, or you can count from the outside, milvar and milagav, lagav and milvar. So inside and outside means, do you add on 33%, a third from what you have, you add on, or maybe you should add on 50%, because if you add on 50%, what you have is now, what you added is a third. So that's an open question in the Gemara. Is it, do you add on 33 or do you add on 50? So the Shulchan Aruch and a number of the Rishonim Paskin, Lakula Paskin, you add on 33%, the smaller number. So as Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan and others observe from here, that it sounds like they're assuming that we're dealing with a din derabbanan, that it's an unresolved question in the Gemara. So if we don't know what to do, unresolved, so safek derabbanan Lakula. So we should go leniently. So maybe the fact that this is the view of the Shulchan Aruch and other Rishonim indicate they believe this is a din derabbanan. That's proof number one. Proof number two, the Ritva has a comment in his commentary to Masachas Sukkah on Daf Yud Aleph, where the Gemara talks about an eged, the notion of having a bundling of the lulav. Should be tied together so it shouldn't be flip-flopping all over the place. So that is also a component of Hiddur Mitzvah. And so in that context, the Ritva says that Hiddur Mitzvah has got to be the Rabbanan. Why? Because he assumes, and you don't have to agree with this, not all the Rishonim necessarily take the stance, but he assumes that if something is l'charchila in b'di'avid, the idea of having, ideally you should do it this way, but b'di'avid it's okay without it, so his assumption is that only works for the Rabbanans. You don't have such a distinction on a level of Minat Torah. On a level of Minat Torah, it's all or nothing. Either you did it or you didn't do it. This idea of, well, better do it this way, but if not, it's also good. That's the Rabbanan kind of thinking.
And that's like the definition of Hiddur, whether
Well, we know that we don't have to have hither, right? Hither kind of by its nature is something extra. So the idea that it's not crucial, so that's got to be the way the Ritva understands. That's what it sounds like, right? Again, you don't have to accept this premise. There's a famous Tosfos Maseches Nida that distinguishes on this point between a mitzvah and a matir. Tosfos says that there are some things which can have lechafilas b'di'eved. That's if it's a mitzvah. The Torah wants you to do something, you can do it. You can do it well. You can do it better. But there are other types of dinim which are a matir, which you shecht an animal. It's either shechted or it's not shechted. You want it to become mutter. So you give a get. It's either given, either she's married or she's divorced. So to change the status like that, that's got to be all or nothing. But a mitzvah can be more subjective. But the Ritva is assuming not that way, and the Ritva is assuming that it's all or nothing, and therefore it's not going to work if it's Minat Torah. So that's his proof that Hidur Mitzvah in this case is Midrabban. So if it is Midrabban, so as some ask, is it Dvar Yehoshua has a tshuva? So then what does the pasuk mean? Because it's a little hard to figure out what this phrase means, that Keli V'Yandayu. Truth is, the Gemara has another drash on it. The Gemara says that this is one of the sources for the mitzvah of chesed, that there is a concept, Heve Dome Lo, Zek Keli V'Yandayu Ani V'Hu, I want to be like God, I want to be with God. So that would also be a possible interpretation. But in any event, it's an interesting question, what does the pasuk mean? So the Chassam Sofer, in his Chidushim to Maseches Gittin, he suggests that even if Hidur Mitzvah in general is the Rabbanan, but when it comes to God's name itself, that should be Mohodur on a level of Manat Torah. That's literally what the pasuk says. Zeh Keli V'Yanvehu, this is my God, I will glorify it. So I will glorify at least the name of God. Other mitzvahs, a little less direct, okay, is what the question. But the name itself, that for sure, that's a din d'oraisa, so that's the way he assumes. So what exactly is the nature of this whole din? What exactly is Hidur Mitzvah about? So one could perhaps suggest that we could ask the question as follows. Do we assume that Hidur Mitzvah is about us? It's about showing that we're committed, that we invest in the mitzvah, that we put ourselves into it, and that we're not just satisfied to be yitzhak, to just have enough to get by, but we want to show that we are passionate, involved, committed to the mitzvah, enthusiastic about it. So that's what Hidur Mitzvah is. Hidur Mitzvah is about displaying our involvement and our passion. Or, alternatively, we could say that it's not about us, but it's about the mitzvah. That maybe there is a rule that is a general rule, applies to all mitzvahs across the board when there is a visual component, that we want to be impressive. The religions of the world in general have all hit upon this idea that they should have beautiful buildings and beautiful objects and beautiful artwork, that it's worth trying to impress people, to have an aesthetic impression created that draws people toward the religion. So maybe we have that same idea as well, that maybe we want to use beautiful objects in order to, through that, bring glory to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then it really becomes a rule in the mitzvah, that every mitzvah has, in addition to all of the local halachas, also has a halacha of impressing people with the physicality of the mitzvah. So if one poses this particular question, so one could really perhaps argue on the Ritva's proof. Because when the Ritva says that all the halachas of a mitzvah have to be ma'akev if they're Minat Torah, so one could say, yeah, that's true. The dinim of the mitzvah, all the rules of the mitzvah have to be ma'akev. But maybe Hidur Mitzvah is not about the mitzvah. Maybe it's about how you relate to the mitzvah. So maybe it's not unheard of to say that Hidur Mitzvah is not ma'akev and yet is still min ha-Torah, because it's not a detail in how we do the mitzvah, it's a detail in us, that we should relate to the mitzvah, the Hidur. If we fail to do so, that's a failure in how we do it, But the mitzvah itself, all the details of the mitzvah were fulfilled. So maybe if one takes that kind of understanding, it might be room to ask a little bit of a question on the Ritva's assumption. Now, to get to the second proof, the Sugya in Bava Kama, so as I mentioned before, I was only saying Rashi's reading of it. There's really a machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos about this. This question of adding on a third. So the way we said it before, like Rashi, is that it means adding on a third of the price. Adding on $10 or $15 to the $30 price tag. But Tosfos gives a different example, which doesn't really work for everything. Let's focus on Esrog for a second, because it works there. So we know that when it comes to Esrog, so one of the components of Hiddur is size. That it should be impressive in its magnitude. So it says Tosfos, what are we talking about here? We're talking about, you could have bought an Esrog that is the size of an Egos, the minimum kosher size. And instead, you're going to try to get a bigger one. So how much bigger does it have to be? Twice as big? Three times as big? So no, it only has to be one third bigger. So these two views may reflect two opinions in what Hiddur Mitzvah is about. That according to Rashi, about how much money you spend, so we're looking to see how involved you are in the mitzvah, how committed you are. So how much you spend is an indication of your commitment, is an indication of how much you are willing to put into the experience. While Tosfos is not measuring that at all, and Tosfos is focused on the impact of the mitzvah, or what people see. So therefore, we want to ratchet that up. So Stam Mitzvah people will see a small Esrog. Hiddur Mitzvah means they should see more. They should have a bigger Esrog. Well, on that point of what you can see, so there also is a Machlokas HaRishonim concerning, to borrow something from last week's parasha, concerning Tefillin. That there is a concept, let's say we talk about it, say for Torah, if you're learning the beginning of Maseches Gittin, so this is a sugya in the beginning of the first barak of Gittin, middle first barak of Gittin, that there is a concept of sirtut, right? That you have to write a Sefer Torah in such a way that it should be neat, it should have lines, etc. So there is a question, do these same standards apply also if you're writing the Parashiyos of Tefillin? They also have to be beautiful. So what's the difference? So the difference is, Sefer Torah people see. Tefillin are rolled up inside the batin, people don't see. So is it necessary or worth anything to invest hiddur in something that's not going to be visible? So it seems that this is perhaps the same question. That if the idea is that it's about how much you put into it, so then maybe it doesn't matter that people aren't going to be able to see it. But if the idea is that it's about having an impact on people, so then it's important that it be something visible. If it's not visible, then perhaps there's no point to it.
Hi. A side question, just because I don't even know if this is true, but isn't it like probably more expensive to for the smaller print? So according to Tosfos, if you want to say hiddur's on a Torah or on film, it should be bigger. But they say, I don't know if it's it's nicer to make it smaller. I know it's definitely harder for the silver to do that.
Right.
So is that how would Tosfos interpret the hiddur for a safer Torah or for film? Is it the print should be bigger?
Well, that's why I said the example doesn't really work as well for everything. It works well for Esrog, because Esrog is quantifiable that way. And it's interesting, Rashi actually uses the example of Sefer Torah, and then Tosfos switches it to Esrog, because Tosfos needs something quantifiable. So it's a good question whether the whole concept is relevant to a Sefer Torah.
Tosfos or no?
Tosfos will read the Gemara as talking about something quantifiable. And if something is not quantifiable, so maybe the Gemara is not talking about that.
Hiddur, what doesn't apply to it? Or
no, Hiddur applies. It's just that the whole concept of Shlish might not apply.
And then what would Hiddur be in that case then? According to
Hiddur would still be beautifying. Well, at measuring it would be harder. I think that's why maybe he would only interpret it.
Is there a way to measure it when it's not quantifiable?
Maybe not. That's why Rashi is a little bit more intuitive. But maybe that's part of the question. So there is also another interesting debate. Now, let's say somebody is performing a bris milah. So when it comes to a bris, without getting into too many details, so there's a way to do things so that you yotze, and there's a way to do things behider. So the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos and Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, which is where the main sugya of Hidur Mitzvah is, where it gets into this. So the Gemara says when you're doing the bris, so you should try to do it so that you cover everything, you do it behider as well. As long as you haven't separated your hand, if you've taken your hand already away from the bris, so then says the Gemara, you'd only go back if it was something crucial, if it was part of the base mitzvah. But for a hider, you're not going to go back. So why shouldn't I go back? Why don't I want to get the mitzvah in its perfect form? So most of the Rishonim, Rashi and Tosfos and the Ramban and the Tur and the Ramah, most of the Rishonim assume that the reason you're not going to go back is because it's Shabbos. It's where the Gemara appears in Masechta Shabbos. So of course, Bris Milah on Shabbos itself is a Chiddush. The whole notion that you could have the surgery on Shabbos is a Chiddush. So to say that you should go back for a hiddur, so that's what the Gemara is telling you, that you don't do. But if it was a weekday, so apparently there'd be no reason not to. Except for the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Milah in Perek Beis, Halacha Dalet. So the Rambam brings this Halacha over there in Hilchos Milah, and he doesn't assume that it's talking about Shabbos. The Rambam assumes that any day of the week, if you have a bris, and you already put your hand away, so you don't go back for a hiddur. So why shouldn't I go back if it's a weekday? If it's not Shabbos, I don't have a chavala issue. So why shouldn't I go back and perform the hiddur? So there is a mahalach that Achronim have. You can find this in the Briskarav, and before that in the Beis Halevi, and before that in the Shagas Aryeh. Achronim have different versions of this idea. But it could be that what the Rambam is getting at is that hiddur mitzvah has to be done together with the action of the mitzvah. But it's not shaykh to have an action of a mitzvah and to have a hiddur separate from that. So once you finish the bris, you can't go back and separately do the hiddur. The hiddur isn't how you do it the first time. If it's not part of the actions, so then it can't be a hiddur mitzvah. This is related, there's a famous brain teaser, I guess, that they associate with Reb Chaim Brisker, but the funny thing is it's in the Tshuvas Beis Halevi, so his father wrote it down before he said it, that goes as follows. Let's say I were to give you two esrogim, and one esrog is definitely kosher, but we're not sure if it's mahodur, and the other esrog is for sure mahodur, it's gorgeous, but we're not sure if it's kosher. So which should you take first? So the answer, a little bit non-intuitive, is that you take the one that's possibly not kosher first. Because if it is kosher, so then great, it's kosher and mahudr. And if it's not, you'll pick up the other one also, that one will at least be kosher. So I'll just say that in a second. So if you do it the other way around, so then if it's kosher, so then you're done. There's no point in picking up the mahudr one after that because you're ready with yotze. You can't have the hiddur separate from the mitzvah. This allegedly is Reb Chaim in print, it's the Beis Halevi. So your question about bracha levatal, I think what you mean is the hefsek. Right? Because the bracha is not really the levatal, you'll make the bracha and you'll pick up a kosher esrog. The only question is maybe you'll pick up a non-kosher esrog in between. You're picking up both. The only question is maybe you have the non-kosher one in the middle between the bracha and the mitzvah. So that sounds like it might be a hefsek issue. So apparently they're assuming that it's not. Not everyone agrees. There's an Avin Nezer about this, doesn't accept the whole premise. You could argue that it is a hefsek, but he assumes that if you're not talking, you should make the bracha and you pick up two esrogim, there's not a hefsek involved. Which makes sense, because, for example, you're shechting behemoths, you make a bracha, you can then shech a whole bunch of animals. So it can go on many different acts. Here it's a little bit different because maybe one of the picking up of the esrogs is not a mitzvah at all, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a problem.
Is that such a good riot? Because the first one you're shechting is good, meaning like when you say Berachas HaTorah, you have to say Berachas Kohanim right away because you have to learn right away. Even though they say if you forgot, you could have Kavana Barah Rabbah, maybe that would be a good riot because afterwards, even though if you don't say, I think the Mishnah says, even if you don't say, if you don't do any Talmud Torah, you're still Yotze. I don't know if that's a riot.
Could be. So what comes out from the Rambam is that this whole concept of Hiddur, it's all in how you do the mitzvah. You have to do the mitzvah in a way that is behider. And it's not necessarily about the impact. It's not necessarily about what's left over afterwards. Because that, in theory, you could fix up separate from the mitzvah. But apparently the idea here is that the mitzvah should be done in a way that shows the proper enthusiasm. And in fact, some Achronim note that the Rambam doesn't seem to reflect at all the concept of a beautiful cheft of shal mitzvah. It doesn't really describe the idea that our objects should be appealing, but in talking about hither, the only sense in which he really brings it is the sense of the asiyas ha-mitzvah, that the mitzvah should be done in its optimal fashion, which some would term differently, some would term as mitzvah min ha-mufchar. And just to mention a few other examples where you find in Rishonim this idea of a hiddur in the action. So there is a Tosus in Masechas Brachas and Daf Chaf Aleph, which talks about the Shemaya Kaona. And this is not necessarily the accepted view. This isn't really the way we relate to this. But Tosus assumes that maybe there's a hiddur mitzvah involved in not having somebody be motzi you in a bracha. And if you make a bracha, you just... If you make a bracha yourself, rather than have somebody do it for you, supposed to suggest that's a hiddur mitzvah. So that's essentially a hiddur in the action. Right? There's no visible impact. It's all in how you do it. And yet there's this concept of hiddur that plays out there as well. Another possible example is the Rashbam in Maseches Pesachim. The Rashbam says that the notion that the Mishnah tells us there in the Tzadites and Pesachim, that you shouldn't eat too much on Erev Pesach, because when you eat the matzah that night, we want that you should eat the matzah b'te'avon. You should eat the matzah with a hearty appetite. So the Rashbam says that that's also a din in hiddur, that the mitzvah should be done with a relish, so to speak, that also reflects a hiddur in the action. So that also could reflect a certain understanding in what hiddur mitzvah means. So this really goes to a broader question that you find in the concept of hiddur mitzvah. The question, or the concept of ideas like this as a whole, do you assume that this is something that's about you and therefore it doesn't affect the mitzvah at all? Or do we assume that it really becomes a part of the mitzvah itself? So that could impact on a number of questions. For example, so we have a prohibition of Bal Tashchis, that we're not going to throw away something that's useful, something that's valuable. So that is suspended often if we have a mitzvah, if you need to destroy something so that you can perform a mitzvah, so we tend to assume that it's mutter. So what if it's for a hiddur mitzvah? This is a question that Sefer Chassidim deals with. Now, let's say somebody's writing a Sefer Torah, and he made one of the urios, one of the panels for the Sefer Torah, so he did it in a way that's kosher, but it's not really so impressive. It's not something he's happy with. So does he have a right to say, I'll take this urea, and I'll put it in the Geniza, I'll put it away? Or should you say that no, that that's Bal Tashchis, because here you have a kosher Sefer Torah, how could you let this go to waste? So do you assume that hiddur mitzvah is enough of a reason to suspend the concept of Bal Tashchis here? And this question of whether it becomes a part of the mitzvah or not also affects the general balancing of issues. when you have other values that you're weighing up against Torah mitzvah, as you have often, so this also goes into the equation. For example, it's reason makdim of the mitzvah is one that's often asked. If you have to choose between doing a mitzvah in the optimal fashion, we'll call it a mitzvah, if you're doing the mitzvah in the earliest possible fashion, for the purposes of reason makdim of the mitzvah, so what's more important? Do you assume that hiddur is part of the rules of the mitzvah? Or do we relate to it as separately than that? Do we relate to it perhaps as showing enthusiasm? In which case you could say, well, I show enthusiasm in other ways, and there's reason makdim of the mitzvahs, and therefore maybe that should be prioritized for whatever reason. This is something that we just recently discussed, because we had said Kiddush Levana. So Kiddush Levana, so that takes place generally on Motzei Shabbos, on a Saturday night, even though that's not really when the Zman starts. So the notion of waiting till Motzei Shabbos is because we want to look our best, we want to be mechabed the mitzvah by being dressed up. So since people essentially dress up for Shabbos, so then they'll still be dressed up Motzei Shabbos, so that's the best time to do it. So there, that's again a trade-off between doing the mitzvah at the earliest possible time versus doing the mitzvah at a later time that will be more optimal.
It's
a machlokas. It's a big discussion. Open question.
Some people say it's best to daven before you go.
Yeah, maybe. A related question is, we also have a principle of mitzvah bo yoshim v'shlucho. It's better to do a mitzvah yourself rather than have somebody else do it for you. So, what if that is challenged by... what if that is challenged by a hidden mitzvah? Like, for example, we have a mitzvah to write a sefer Torah. So, even let's pretend for a second that I could somehow produce a kosher sefer Torah. But chances are it's not going to be the nicest job if I have a professional do it. So he will make a nicer Sefer Torah. So do we assume that this mitzvah is about worrying about the biggest hither? In which case we're going to try to perhaps balance both? Or is it a din how you relate to things? In which case it should for sure win over mitzvah bo yoshim v'shlucho. Most of the posts we discuss this is Rabbi Yeshua and David Meisharim all agree that here hiddur mitzvah wins out over mitzvah bo yoshim v'shlucho. So it's interesting to note that we do find a passage in the Gemara Maseches Menachos which seems to suggest that hiddur mitzvah is Dolcha Shabbos. Even though we said before that it's not Docha Shabbos, that at least everyone agrees in the Gemara about Mila, that if it's Shabbos, you don't go back. But there's a Gemara Maseches Menachos and Daf Samach Dalid, which seems to have a little bit of a different take. Because the Gemara there talks about a person wants to bring a korban. Not a person, but rather the tzibur. The whole community has to bring a korban. So for a korban to be brought on Shabbos, it has to be a korban tzibur shezmano kavu. It's got to be a korban on behalf of the whole congregation. It has a set time. So let's say you have such a carbon. And they already shechted the animal, they're ready to go. And then they find that there's a better animal. There's an animal that's plumper. It'll be a better carbon. So the Gemara says they go and they shech the second animal. And it's a surprising idea because you're shechting in Shabbat. Why? Because you want to bring a carbon, but you can bring a carbon without this. So it's all so you can bring the carbon behider. So it sounds like hither is enough of a justification to be Mechal Shabbos. So this kasha is raised by the Shagas Aryeh and others, and there's different approaches. Some suggest that maybe this is not about Zekei Levi and Veyim, but this is about something else. And the Torah says, in reference to karbanos, mimivchar nidracha, you should bring karbanos from the best of what you have to offer. So maybe that's a rule that is local to karbanos. Karbanos has its own concept of an emphasis on hiddur. And it's not a reflection of the general idea of Zeke Levi and Zahim. You also find, just parenthetically, that it's also possible that Esrog has its own idea of Zeke Levi and Zahim. There's Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos, and Lulav HaGazel, that the question is, what's the psul of a dried out Esrog? So Rashi says the psul is because of the Hidden Mitzvah. So Tosfos says, what are you talking about? Hidden Mitzvah is generally not ma'akev. And a dried out Esrog is no good. Dried out Lulav is no good. So Tosfos says that Tosfos gives a different answer. But as many explain, I think Rav Soloveitchik has a discussion about this in the Shiurim that were printed, that when it comes to Esrog, so there's a different din of Hidr, that the Torah says, pre-Eitz Hadar, that that's not Zakei Levi and Zeyu, that's a rule that is local to Esrog, that has its own concept of Hidr, and that could go to define a Hidr, that could go to define an Esrog itself. But Zakei Levi and Zeyu, or Nachanami, is a different din, which is not the operative force behind that, and that affects other things like Eged, and things like that. Okay, so maybe we'll stop there. We'll just quickly chaz it. So we talked about the fact that there is a pasuk in Parshat B'Shalach says that Kelev Yanvehu, the Gemara suggests, among other things, that this means that there's a concept of Hidr Mitzvah. It's machlokes whether it's Deraisa or Rabbanan. We mentioned that the fact that the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch pasuk and the Kula on the question of how big is a third, that is taken to be a sign that it's the Rabbanan. And also the fact that the Ritva asserts that if it was Minat Torah, so then it would have to be Ma'akev. So we were Chaker in general, how do we relate to Hidr Mitzvah? Is it about how we relate to Mitzvah? Is it about our showing enthusiasm? Or is it about having a Mitzvah that is impressive in its impact? And that if you believe it's about you, so then that could answer up the Rash, the Ritva's question. That it could be that the Dinim of the Torah are ma'akev when it's a rule of the mitzvah. But if it's not a rule of the mitzvah, but it's a rule of how you relate to the mitzvah, so maybe that doesn't have to be ma'akev, even according to the ritva. Now we mentioned in the Gemara in Bava Kamma and Daf Tes, Machlok between Rashi and Tosus, about whether it's about spending money or spending more of an impact, getting achieving more of an impact, and how that correlates to the two sides. And then we talked also about the Machlok, how we've shown him whether you should have beautiful tefillin on the inside, that maybe Hidr is only about things that are valuable, or alternatively it's about your putting effort in, which case might be a different story. And then we talked also about the Gemara about Prismila, about not going back for a Hidr, that most Rishonim say that you don't go back because of Shabbos. The Rambam says you don't go back at all, and the Achronim explain because the Rambam believes that the Hidr has to be together with the action itself. And that's part of the definition of Hidr. We saw the Rambam doesn't actually bring the concept of beautiful objects at all. Maybe he just understands Hidr and how it is and how we do things. And then we mentioned other examples among Rishonim of that. We mentioned the Tosfos about the Shemaya Ka'ona and the Rashbam about eating matzah le te'avon. Then we talked about some of the questions of balancing Hidr Mitzvah against other concepts. Against the concept of reason makdim le mitzvah, which comes up all the time, and against the concept of mitzvah b'yoshim b'shlucho, of you're doing a mitzvah on your own. And then we talked about the fact that it sounds like from the Gemara in Masachas Menachos that you can mechal Shabbos, you have to mechal Shabbos for a hiddur. The Gemara talks about whether the carbon has already been shechted and you find another carbon that's more beautiful, so that's really a hiddur. So that could be, but it might be that's a din that's local to local to Karbanos because of Yivchar Nidracha. And then we mentioned another din which has probably its own concept of Hidr, and that's by Esrog, where we have the concept of Pre-Eitz Hadar, and that's why it could be that a dried Lulav and Esrog might not be effective even a level Manat Torah because of Hidr, because when it comes to Lulav and Esrog, the Hidr Mitzvah concept is grounded in a whole different source.
When we talk about Hidr with regards to money, is that like an average price?
With regards to what? I'm sorry?
With regards to money.
Yeah.
Is that, do we start from an average price? Or
that's a good question. So it's not so clear. It seems like, and this is in the pre-internet shopping era, but it seems like you have objects in front of you. So here you're ready to pay X for this one, and that becomes the standard.
And then you have the opportunity to not ratchet up a little bit, so you ratchet up within a third. There's clearly a lot of subjectivity in that, because if you really were comparison shopping starting from the absolute basics, so it's going to get a little more complicated.